cold showers. That's what I was leading up to with that. Cold showers. Mm. If you can finish with a cold shower, even if it just, it doesn't, you know, just you work up to it, you get more and more tolerant to it. It really does help the body. It helps, it gives you a dopamine hit. So it's not even that you've just made yourself cold and you're awake. It generally, it stimulates dopamine in the body.
And it's brilliant for anxiety in the sense that stimulates your vagus nerve.
Exactly.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. Well, earlier this year, members of the Arts Club and Lanzerhof at the Arts Club had the privilege of attending a panel talk discussion with Rose Ferguson and Poppy Jamie. And after such an insightful discussion, we are delighted to include the talk in today's episode for the Feel Well series of Forever Young. And as Rose and Poppy both discuss, it can indeed be challenging to find the time to prioritise health and well-being, but rather than feeling guilty for our shortcomings, we should instead consider simpler ways to energise, eat well, and improve our mental and physical health. So do listen and enjoy their insights. Poppy is the founder of the well-being and mindfulness app Happy Not Perfect, and Rose is a practicing nutritionist here at Lanzerhof at the Arts Club, as well as juggling her career as an international model, author, and regular contributor to Vogue. Enjoy the show, and as always, for more information, please email lanzerhof@theartsclub.co.uk.
And if you're anything like me, you may still be shocked. We're at the end of January. I'm not quite sure what I've done this month, but it's gone by. And I am truly over the moon to be sitting here with Rosemary Ferguson, who is a health guru, my favourite health guru, who's here to answer my questions and all of yours. And she's also the newly appointed nutritional practitioner at the Lanzerhof.
Is mine on? Oh, yeah. Hi, everyone. I am.
So before we begin, this interview is going to be recorded for the Arts Club podcast and also my podcast, the Not Perfect podcast. And as said, we are really looking forward to hearing your questions. So please have those at the ready. So a little bit about Rosemary Ferguson. She started her career as a successful model and began the iconic five-day plan. And I just a side note, I have so many friends obsessed with the five-day plan. It's like everyone's SOS. They're like, I must do a five-day plan now. After kind of holiday periods, especially. She's the co-founder of Pure Filth, author, writer, and mum of three. In 2013, Rosemary qualified at the College of Naturopathic Medicine, and in 2019, Rosemary certified as a functional medicine practitioner. So, in other words, she truly is a guru of all things health, and I really can't wait to ask her about how we can make 2022 the healthiest yet. So in the Not Perfect podcast, I always ask my guests the same three questions. What is a favourite quote you return to often and why?
Well, this one was really, I was really struggling with this one. And then I thought, actually, one thing I return to again and again is Einstein's quote of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and expecting the same, a different result. And I apply this to many things. One, my relationship with my husband. If I had to keep doing the same thing, it's always going to end the same way. But mostly when I think about health and stress and all those things are like, you know, I see people and they do the same cycle of things. You know, they fall on the wagon, then they're off the wagon, you know, and we don't change it for us in particular. You know, we sort of read things and think, oh, I'm going to do that because that will work. And then it doesn't. So then do you know what I mean? You just go round and round in the same circle. So that was that.
I love that quote because when I read some research that said 98% of our thoughts today were the same as yesterday, I suddenly thought, oh my God, Einstein was correct all of those years ago. And science is kind of proving how real and right that quote was.
Yeah. I mean, I think I see lots of people, but I do the same. You know, we try to to change our behavior by doing the same thing again and again. Like, okay, I'm not going to drink. This is where I really think about it with drinking. I'm not going to drink from Monday to Friday, and then I'm going to drink all weekend. And then eventually they start drinking on Thursday, and then eventually we start drinking on Tuesday. And then eventually we're back to drinking 7 days a week, and then we do it again. And you know, you sort of have to go, okay, something wrong here, because I'm drinking the same thing and nothing's changing.
Well, I can't wait to dive into maybe some tips to help us kind of change habits. It seems to be one of the hardest things, but yet one of the most powerful things when we're putting all your work into practice. What's a life lesson you've been reminded of recently?
Well, I think so, because during COVID, I slowed down because I wasn't racing around. I wasn't running into clinic, running up and down the motorway. And I was a different person. And I just thought, I spend a lot of my time telling people to take it easy, make life more simple, take your time, breathe, all of the things that I don't do. And that really reminded me of, actually, because the quality of life, if you're not enjoying life, then you don't have any quality of life. It doesn't matter how successful you're being. And so for me, it was really just slow down, keep in your body, and take a deep breath. Take a deep breath.
It's amazing, but I've had a conversation recently about that in the sense that it's we can go for so long not really realizing we're not enjoying life.
Yeah, and I think just for me, that like adrenal, like constant, makes me feel like that busyness, that obsessive busyness. You feel like you're worth, it's your value. You know, you feel worthwhile because you're obsessively busy, but actually, you're not very content. You're quite discontent, in fact. And so for me, I think just slowing down is really important. I don't think the busier you are necessarily, the more productive you are, or the happier you are.
So. Yeah. The greatest coping mechanism alive, and cover up. But I think that's why working with professionals can often be the greatest rope out of that, because sometimes I think slowing down can feel so scary, and doing it in company is the only way to do it in a way that feels a bit easier.
Yeah, that's so true. Because when you stop, you know, for me, I feel if I'm not really, really busy, then what's going on with work? What's happening? You know, or just like you say, actually, just relationships at home. You know, I have three older children, either 15, 16 and 22. So actually having time to sit and talk with them rather than rushing around. You know, it's interesting. My oldest daughter is at university and she's very into student way of life. She loves sitting around debating and discussing. And she's like, can we just sit after a meal and talk? Because I'm like tidying up, clearing up, like next. And so over lockdown, there were enforced debates and conversations, which my other half really likes, but I'm not very good at, because it makes me feel uncomfortable. So it was interesting. And you're right, it leaves gaps when you slow down. It leaves gaps and places of discomfort, perhaps.
That's kind of sounds like our house. But also, I'm a terrible debater, so I always lose like every argument. How do you define happiness?
Well, I suppose happiness comes and closely linked to what I've just been talking about. I think contentment, this feeling of ease. You know, for me, when I'm not always, I feel happy when I, you know, I can be quite codependent. So it's like I get my worth from like work, or you know, sort of being around lots of people and stuff, and actually just being, you know, I'm not very good at being on my own. And then sometimes my house is empty and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And so I think, you know, that for me personally, I think being at ease with myself and feeling content with what I've got, and that it's not a dreadful word, but it just irks me now, gratitude. Feeling grateful, I mean, it does, you know, I've got a lot to be grateful for. And I think just feeling happy with your lot is sometimes just a nice place to be.
Couldn't agree more. And I agree with you. I find when someone uses the word gratitude, I kind of roll my eyes thinking it's so overused. It's this wellness cliche. And we all rationally go, yes, I know I need to be grateful. But when we actually do it, when we actually sit there, it is the medicine to the world of Instagram and social media and comparison culture.
And I suppose it also makes you feel present, doesn't it? You know, when you sort of think, sit and think about what you do. I mean, it's like, you know, if you sit and look at what you can see and what you can hear and what you can smell, just that moment of not not being aware of everything or worrying about what anything else is going on in the world brings a huge amount of contentment. And that for me is peace, and that means happy.
Oh, that's a really lovely answer. Thank you for that. So at this time of year, I think every health brand, every practitioner is suddenly into overdrive with marketing in terms of, you know, telling us to do different diets, different health regimes. We're being bombarded with messages left, right and centre, and it can feel really confusing. How do you feel about this quite kind of, I guess, like generic new you, new year, let's go. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think New Year's resolutions are difficult because there are very, very few people who stick to them. I think January is not a bad time to have a little rest. I think if you look at the kickback from December, I go on and on in December about balance. Take your time. Don't drink too much. Don't overindulge. Everybody drinks too much. Everybody overindulges. Everybody doesn't sleep. So I think if January is a time of just going inward a little bit, it's not a bad thing to do. I think putting yourself under any regime in January is not the best thing to do. I think if you're a bit looser and like, okay, I'm just going to eat a few more fruit and veg, I'm going to reduce the alcohol, I'm going to do, I think doing a little bit of exercise in January is really good for you. You know, get outside, 20 minutes walking a day. I think it's not a bad time to reflect, I suppose, January. But I do think strict regimes are, they're bound to fail. And then it makes you feel a bit crap, doesn't it? If you don't do it and you're just like, oh, I failed at that.
That's really interesting because I feel that that's so nuanced. And also what you just said is it feels a bit more achievable, this idea that actually we really need a rest rather than going on, okay, now we're all going to sign up for the marathon.
I mean, I think that's really true. And also, it's just a little shift. I think acknowledging that January is a good time to balance out December is not a bad thing to do. You know, but I don't think it has to be. I think people think they're going to change their whole way of being. You know, it's like what we were saying, the quote, Einstein's quote, is like, we're going to do this every January. We're going to pretend we're not going to drink. We're not going to ever eat gluten again. Like up the veg. Have a bit of exercise, drink more water, drink less alcohol, you know, do 10,000 steps a day if that's what it is. But do something that's achievable because small steps make big changes. And I think in January, that's the thing actually that I think is that people create this huge step that they can't achieve, whereas actually doing little steps make a big difference. And I know at clinic doesn't get busy till February.
Really?
Because, well, I think the five-day plan is really busy in January because everyone's like, great, silver bullet. It's like, you do it for me and I'll do it. But clinic, where you're asking someone to work for themselves, you know, I can't do it for you, you have to do it, is usually quite quiet in January because I think people have got their tail between their legs a little bit. And it takes a while for the December, you know, hangover to wear off.
So you must obviously look at so many different diets that are out there in books, on the internet, on Instagram, and I'm sure there's some where you just wish that they were never printed, and others you think, oh yes, that would be quite helpful for someone. What constitutes a good diet?
Well, I think balance, that's another dreadful word, but I think it's true. I suppose if you're looking at if you wanted a framework, I think the paleo diet is quite useful. I think it's very anti-inflammatory.
So could you mind just, people who are quite nutritional literate like me?
So paleo is low grain, higher in proteins and good fats. There's lots of vegetables in it. So keto is very high in good fats. Well, fats actually, not necessarily good. And protein, but low on other things like even vegetables. Whereas paleo is a bit more balanced and there's lots of vegetables involved. It's just, I suppose the rule of paleo is it's quite low in grains because we didn't used to eat that many grains. So I think, especially as you get older, I think paleo, where you're focusing more on lean proteins and good fats and vegetables, is a better way, is a good way to, it's a good framework. But, and what else? I suppose anti-inflammatory foods, you know, so high veg, nice fish, good fats again. It's always good fats. No, it's really not rocket science. I think if you said to somebody, what do you think is a healthy way to eat? They'd say vegetable, fruit, lean meat, you know, lean protein. I think that's what most people would say. And they might say complex carbs, which are also fine too. But
I find fruit is also then a topic of discussion because people say, well, is fruit good? It doesn't have loads of sugar in it. What are your thoughts on that?
It's funny, actually, so many people come into clinic and they're like, I haven't eaten fruit for years. And I'm like, why? And they're really proud of themselves. And whilst a fruit is full of sugar, one fruit should be eaten before the meal because it breaks down much lower down the digestive tract. So if you can get quite gassy if you don't, and it can also just sit and ferment. So fruit should be eaten before, which is how it used to be eaten. It used to be eaten before the meal. But it's a really good snack. I think the reason fruit and sugar have got so intertwined is because of fruit juice. So you juice an orange and you take out all the fibre of that orange, then you have got very high sugar, high glycemic index. It's going to hit the bloodstream really fast. So, but if you're eating the whole thing, so with fruit, if you eat the whole thing, there's loads of fibre, it'll slow the sugar absorption down. And it's got loads of little, they're called polyphenols or phytonutrients, which are so good for you. So yeah, I'm a big fan of fruit, but lots of people cut it out.
Are there types of fruit, though, that we should be leaning to over others?
Well, berries are always berries always come out great. I mean, for like diabetics, I'd say have some blueberries every day. They're really, you know, they're also, people like them. But apart from, I mean, the only thing with berries are that they're quite heavily pesticided. So if you're not going to buy organic, you need to really make sure you wash them really well. But otherwise, berries are brilliant. All fruit, I think it's good to have a variety of all of them. You know, things like mango and pineapple are great for digestion. You know, they've all got their part to play, but berries in particular seem to pack a punch.
What are your thoughts on breakfast? Because I feel like, again, this has become another controversial meal of the day. Some people think we should have it, others don't. Should we be eating breakfast? Sorry if I sound so basic.
No, it's true. It is a controversial meal of the day. I love that. Breakfast suddenly is really... it is, because everyone used to say, eat breakfast, you've got to eat breakfast. It's the main meal of the day. Eat like a king at breakfast. Actually, science shows that some people are better without breakfast. So there's that. And this is where it's so individual. So you have to listen to your body. If you have breakfast in the morning, and I used to tell people, have porridge, definitely have porridge in the morning, until I realised that some people are really not great with carbohydrate in the morning. Some people are much better with an egg and avocado. Some people, yes, it's great, but some people, they'll start with porridge and then they'll be sluggish all day, they'll feel hungry all day. So you have to listen to your body, and some people are better without breakfast. You know, so the intermittent fasting thing is very popular, but it's also a very good tool to have.
Right, I've been dying to ask you about intermittent fasting. Okay, so okay. I thought I was an intermittent faster.
Okay.
Until I realised that having two very, very milky lattes wasn't so good for my intermittent fast. Does latte drinking mean you're not an intermittent faster?
Well, it depends what fast you're going for. If you are looking, so the main reason intermittent fasting, that the main sort of what people agree intermittent fasting is where you don't trigger an insulin response. So having a latte would most definitely trigger an insulin response because it's sugar, you know, it's a sugar. But if you're just resting the gut from digestion, so you're giving it liquids, which a latte is, then you're just giving the gut a little bit of time to rest because we spend 50% of our energy digesting every day. So just by reducing that eating window and having a latte, you are also getting some benefit. But I would say in what we sort of generally think about intermittent fasting, it's not giving your body anything that creates an insulin spike. So black coffee, that's why bullet coffees are okay, because you've got fat in there and fat uses ketones rather than, it doesn't turn into glucose, doesn't use insulin.
Really?
You can use a bullet coffee, but the latte has milk in it, which has lactose in it, which is a sugar.
Okay, okay, right. May need to modify that slightly. So what are the benefits of intermittent fasting? Why are you a fan?
Well, I work a lot with people in their 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s. So, and I think as we get older, there's something called, we stop listening to insulin so well. And so when we're talking about keeping your brain clear, keeping the body feeling light, intermittent fasting just stops the pressure on the body, and it means that the insulin levels can rest, so they're not elevated all day long, which in turn is not great for us. So that's why. And intermittent fasting is just a really good way of keeping your energies up. It helps, you know, most people feel more energized. I'm trying to avoid saying weight because it should not be used for weight loss, but it is very handy for weight management. But also, can I just be really clear? It's not really great for weight management if you don't eat for 16 hours and then you eat donuts, drink beer, right. Pizza. It doesn't work. Everyone's tried. It doesn't work.
When we were talking, I was running you through my questions, and one of them was, oh, you know, is there a healthier alcohol? And you were like, yes, everyone tries to ask these kind of shortcuts, but, you know, if we were going to drink, what would you suggest?
Well, I just said to you, then it's true. It doesn't matter what you drink. If you drink enough, you're going to feel terrible. It doesn't make any difference. I suppose what people... it's individual. I know that lots of people go, tequila's amazing. You don't get a hangover. I get the worst headache on tequila, so I won't drink it. But it is to do with... I mean, we're a terrible binge drinking culture as well in this country. I'm a terrible... it's better to drink little and more often than that huge binge... I guess wine, if you can get organic wine, is the least interfered with. You know, it's sort of like it's got some positives, like it's got the red one's got something called resveratrol in it, which is another thing people go, yes, but it's got antioxidants. I'm like, not if you drink half a bottle or a bottle, it doesn't count anymore. But I suppose, I don't know, I suppose also the mixes are the other things that you know, that's something to be really careful of. A vodka, lime and soda, you've got a bit, if you've got fresh lime, there's a bit of something in there, and it's a bit of hydrating because there's a bit of soda. But I think, you know, things like whiskey and Coke and anything with those fizzy drinks is not great, because then you've got the combination of the alcohol and the sugar, and it's not going to work very well.
So circling back to the hope that we probably aren't drinking so much at this time of year compared to the end of last year. And I guess the subject I'd really love to talk about is energy levels, because I'm not sure if, again, anyone would agree with me, but I find that even though Blue Monday is this, you know, it's kind of a made up day, I do find that this time of year, energy can be really, really low. And obviously with the light, it's really difficult to get out of bed. How can we eat in a way that supports our energy levels in, I guess, a time of year we're not getting so much excitement or adrenaline just from our life?
Well, I really feel strongly that January isn't, you know, if you feel like hibernate. We spend a lot of time like trying to push ourselves outside and, you know, and go and do things. And actually, if you feel like just sort of sitting in bed and watching TV and or having a bath, you know, do those sort of things in January, just because they will help you to feel more, they will help you feel more energized eventually, because I think people are probably flat. The lead up to Christmas and that frantic, it's not even Christmas, it's that frantic, you've got to sign off everything at work, which amazes me. I'm like, but we're back in 10 days. But everybody wants everything signed off. So that's, yeah. I think franticness starts mid-November. So I think you're probably a bit of just like, okay, I'm going to be tired and that's okay. And then the things to do is not, it's sort of more than just what you eat. It's also just doing a little bit of exercise. You know, if you can get outside, like you say, the sunlight in your eyes in the morning will help you sleep better at night, but it will also help you feel more energetic because, like you say, we don't get so much sunlight. Things like vitamin D, really important for energy levels. Food-wise, I would make sure that you're eating... I mean, it's the same old stuff, isn't it? It's the same old thing. Make sure you're eating. I suppose in particular, try and eat lots of greens. They're really good for your liver. They're really good for B vitamins. They're really good for your energy levels. I mean, I eat meat. And so if you're plant-based, you need to really, really be careful. You know, I know so many people are plant-based now, which is great, as long as you do it properly. And there's a lot of crappy plant-based food out there, so you know, if you are going to be plant-based, make sure that you are eating lots of legumes. Eat soy is fine as long as it's fermented and organic. Tofu is fine as long as it's well sourced. And then what else can I say? And fish, again, well sourced. But I eat a little bit of meat. I feel very flat if I don't eat meat, so I have a little bit of chicken. And what else was I going to say? I also think, do you know what? I also think doing, actually, to revive your energies is to do a bit of a juice day once in a while. Green juice day is quite helpful. It helps you just, even if you do it for the day, the green juice, and then you have a meal in the evening, so you're not like white knuckling, because that's quite stressful too. I don't want to be white knuckling. So do green juice throughout the day and then have a really nice, you know, protein-based meal in the evening. That's what, and that can really help just to clear the, and just if it really gives you brain clarity, because I think that's the thing, is we all feel quite heavy at this time of year. And the other thing, oh, this is what I do think really helps, is it's called hermetic stress, where you create a little bit of stress that helps you, it's a bit of physical stress, which actually helps you feel brighter. Cold showers. That's what I was leading up to with that. Cold showers. Mm. If you can finish with a cold shower, even if you work up to it, you get more and more tolerant to it. It really does help the body. It helps you, it gives you a dopamine hit. So it's not even that you've just made yourself cold and you're awake. It stimulates dopamine in the body.
And it's brilliant for anxiety in this sense, brilliant. That stimulates your vagus nerve.
Exactly. Exactly.
It is just doing it, though. Do you know what I mean? Even though rationally we're like, we know it's good.
You know what? I mean, because you don't have to go and jump in hamster swimming ponds. You could. So just try. So when I first started doing this, I would do a hot shower, and I can do a really hot shower. We're like burning, go, yeah, great. And then you just turn down as cold as you can for 10 seconds. You can do anything for 10 seconds. And then turn it back up and then do it 3 times. And if you can do that, give yourself a thing, I'm going to do this for 10 days. Mm. And then, because you can, and it doesn't have to be the coldest setting. Do what you can tolerate. Do it so you can do it. Don't make it so unpleasant that you won't do it, because otherwise it's no, you know, I'd rather you do something than nothing.
I'm guessing you're a fan of cryotherapy.
Of cryotherapy. I love it. It's amazing. It's amazing.
And they have a cryo down the road, don't they?
They have got the most amazing cryo at the Lanzerhof. It's so good, isn't it? It's probably like cold in the cold. And you only have to do that for 2 minutes. And they put music on for you and everything. And dance around like a lunatic with your gloves on. It's great.
Dancing plus anything always makes it a bit better. Helps the medicine go down. I'm sure most people in this room caught COVID at some point, and I've obviously, there's lots of, you know, you read the media, you know, this idea of long COVID is something that people are struggling with on all sorts of different degrees, from severe long COVID to even just maybe that's what is influencing kind of these low January energy levels, as well as the time of year. But what are your thoughts from a nutritionist's perspective and a functional medicine perspective of how we can support our body post-virus?
So I think, we know now that it's not a respiratory condition, it's inflammatory. So I think if you look at it from a functional point of view and look at inflammation rather than looking at just the symptom of the cough, or especially with long COVID, you know, you look at people complaining about inflammation around the heart, inflammation in the lungs. So I think, you know, as a whole maintenance plan, you would look at an anti-inflammatory diet, which is what we've spoken about, which, you know, contains complex carbohydrates, whole foods, try and keep it as organic as possible. But then I think from a supplementing point of view, I think you definitely want to think about supplementing with fish oils, or actually, I mean, you know, there's a brilliant oil called Balance Oil, which is brilliant. So that isn't a fish oil, because I know everyone's freaking out about the press that's been going on lately around rancid fish oils, which, yeah, it doesn't sound great. So if you're concerned about that, there's one called Balance Oil, which is an amazing omega-3 oil. And if you're taking omega-3s, the reason it's great for inflammation is it literally takes your body down an anti-inflammatory pathway. Whereas lots of bad fats take you down and make it worse, the omega-3 makes it better. And also things like turmeric, you know, simple things like that you can add to your food. You can take a turmeric, a curcumin supplement, but you can just add it to your food, and it's amazing for inflammation. So I think, you know, just increasing your whole foods, reducing things. I mean, we should talk about what to reduce as well. Sugar is really not your friend. So if you're eating, hear people recoiling when you say sugar, coffee or wine. I said it, there you go, sugar, coffee and wine. Not all coffee, one coffee a day is fine. But if you're drinking lots of coffee, it's really overstimulating and not great for inflammation or long COVID.
interesting because often, and I'm the worst at this, when I wake up not feeling kind of full beam, I will just instantly hit the kettle and drink a coffee and then have about 7 cups of tea, which is probably not ideal. Is tea a bit better than coffee, or is it still as inflammatory?
Well, one coffee a day is fine. It's antioxidant. It actually is. Oh, hang on. You see coffee. It gets everyone every time. Yeah. It's not the liver, it's the adrenals that it's... but decaf, it depends how it's decaffeinated. So just to be... There's a water, Swiss water method, which is fine, or there's a chemical method, which is not so fine, because then you just have lots of chemicals, which are less... You know, so you have to be a bit careful. It's like Coke and Diet Coke. I don't know why I'm talking about those, but Diet Coke is full of... any diet drink or any diet food is full of chemicals to make it still taste okay, and so you really just go with the real thing. If you're going to have it, have full fat. No decaf. It depends. If it's decaffeinated by the Swiss water method, then that's fine. You have to go and ask them.
Are there any brands on in the supermarket that or brands you can think of that do okay decaffeinated drinks?
I don't know. You know, actually, in the supermarket. Sorry, I should know that, and I don't. Sorry, it's because I don't drink coffee. Only because it makes me shake, not because I've got any opinion about it.
And what about
tea? Did you want to know about tea?
Yeah, tea, and black also tea. Matcha too.
Black tea,
like a builder's brew.
Builder's does have loads of it. It still has lots of caffeine in it. The thing about green tea, because green tea has lots of caffeine in it too, but it also has other things, and it works like different. So it's got lots of L-theanine in it, which helps take the edge off. But also, green tea is brilliant for. It's brilliant for detoxification. It's great for glutathione production. I mean, it's got lots of good things in it. Not that tea doesn't. It's just that it is very caffeinated and it's got lots of tannins. And people have it with milk and sugar. You know, that's one of the big issues, actually. People say they have 10 cups of tea and I have 10 teaspoons of sugar a day in that.
And how about matcha or turmeric lattes?
So matcha, I'm a big fan of matcha. It's basically powdered green tea, so it's powdered green leaves. It's amazing. I love it. And turmeric too. The thing about the latte thing is how much are you getting of the green tea and the turmeric, and how much is latte? You know.
And what kind of milk do you think that we should be leaning towards?
I mean, I think. Oat milk, it depends, because oat milk sometimes has some, a lot of oat milks have oils in them. You can really easily make oat milk. But anyway, almond milk, the problem with almonds are that there's a sustainability issue. So I would go oat milk. You can get oat milks that don't have oil in them. That's what I would have. Minefield, I know.
It is a minefield. And so you have your 5-day plan, which it has been hailed as one of the best five-day plans out there for really achieving the results. How did you even come up with the 5-day plan? What is in it that is, I guess, so impactful for people?
Well, it's funny because it's nothing. There's no secret in there, really. The way it's laid out, basically the way it came about was because I wanted to, even though I'm a big fan of fasting, I think it gets abused. It creates a lot of dysfunction in the way people eat or drink, you know. So I thought I would do an eating plan and show people that if you eat like this, you can also, you know, people, if you're looking to lose weight, which a lot of people usually are, you lose weight, but you feel energized, you feel clear-headed. I get quite chippy emails on Tuesday, but on Thursday, everyone's really happy. By Thursday, everyone's like, oh, I feel great. Tuesday, I don't really respond. But I think it was, for me, it was important to show people that food is not the enemy. It's what you eat, that, you know, the type of food you're eating, the food you're choosing to put in your mouth. And so that was really it. So it was, it is slightly weighted towards a bit of livery food, like liver supporting food. And then we do have a liquid day in the middle, but it's quite substantial. You have like soups and smoothies. And then towards the end, it's looking at sort of more gut focused, you know, because you can change your gut bacteria in 24 hours with what you eat. keeping it changed is the challenge. And that was it, really. It was just about showing people, and so it just grew from there. I was just like, no, you can eat and feel great and have energy and lose weight if that's what you need to do.
So, I didn't actually know that. That's really interesting. You can change your gut bacteria in 24 hours. Do you then think that probiotics are needed, or just another marketed supplement that we are kind of led to believe is important?
I think some probiotics are really great. And I think, you know, if you think antibiotics, this is where you sort of have to go, okay, so antibiotics wipe it all out. So actually it's quite useful to have something that we can replace and re-inoculate with. I think eating fermented food on a daily basis or like four times a week is a much better way to maintain your gut microbiome.
And so would you mind just listing off some fermented foods?
So it's all the K's, kimchi, kombucha, kefir. But even things like, you know, even there are prebiotics foods which are like leeks, onions, you know. I think, you know, if you speak to any gut specialist, he'll say eat a rainbow of different fruit and vegetables every day. Or different foods even, actually. It doesn't have to be fruit and veg.
There's a lot more kombucha on the market than ever before. Is kombucha made equally?
No. Some do have... Everyone goes on about the sugar in kombucha. You have to have a bit of sugar in there for it to ferment. That's why, you know, if you think about any fermenting process, in order for those bacteria to thrive, you have to have a little bit of sugar. But I suppose it's when it's flavoured, what's it flavoured with? You know, so, but it will always have a little bit of sugar in it, kombucha. So if that's what you're panicking about, it will always have some.
Interesting. And what, on a supplement side of things, what sort of supplements do you think are really important to add to your diet?
Well, I suppose I know from seeing people, and you'll know that you see people and they go, I'm taking this, and you're like, why? Why? I'm just always like, why are you taking it? What's made you think you should take it? It's definitely not one size fits all with supplements. But I suppose if you're thinking on a general level, things that are useful, you know, and I think people could take it as a maintenance, I think an omega-3 oil would be really up there. I think... most people I know are super stressed, super busy. So then a multi-B, a B complex would be useful. I think vitamin D in the winter is helpful, unless you go sunny, you know, unless you're somewhere sunny. And then a probiotic course probably once or twice a year would be really good, a good thing, maintenance thing to do. I think you have to remember that your body's like really intricate. So if you start taking, so I will high dose vitamin C when I'm getting ill. If I feel like I'm sick, but if you're high dosing anything all the time, you're knocking a whole cascade out of, you know, it's like clockwork. They're like little cogs and everything goes on everything, you know, like, and if you're taking loads of one thing, it's going to knock the next cog out. So, you know, but I definitely think it's worth going to see someone who knows what they're talking about before you start using things, you know, whatever, you know, hardcore supplements. Some supplements are really, really quite strong. You need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I think sometimes we can kind of think, oh, because they're natural or something, you kind of think they're not working or whatever, or just, you know, dose yourself, whatever. That comment you just said, you know, the body's very much an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And us having probably maybe taking more time to respect the delicacy of it is an interesting point.
I think cooking, there are herbs called adaptogenic herbs, which are really useful. So they just help us to, our body to adapt. So ones like ashwagandha, which I know lots of people use, are really quite, you know, nice ones to take, or rhodiola. I was going to say cooking with herbs is really good. Cooking with spices, cook with them, you know, then you can't go wrong really if you're having it in your diet.
Amazing. Well, I am really keen to open the discussion up for everyone who is here. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Thank you. Yes. If you have any advice for all of us who are always rushing, other than slowing down for sleep. Sleep routine.
For sleep. So sleep hygiene. Sleep is a really complicated one, because people who don't sleep will roll their eyes, whatever I say. I suppose sleep hygiene, you know, it really is like turn all your screens off, have a bath, make sure your room is colder and darker than you probably, or colder than you would want it to be. Magnesium gliconate is a really useful magnesium specifically for sleep. And melatonin can be useful. But you need to know why you're taking it, because it can help you. It depends what the problem is. But I think if you're, you know, melatonin can help you go to sleep, but it might not keep you asleep. So it depends what the issue is. Phosphatidylserine is really amazing. If you are a very stressed person, you feel like you've got very high cortisol level at night, phosphatidylserine is amazing because it will blunt the cortisol and help you again go to sleep. But I think probably breath work, I'm sure you would say, but breathing is really helpful, and meditation at night.
Yeah, there's this thing called yoga nidra, and you can listen to it on YouTube. It's free, and it's so simple, but yet it is. There's loads of research studies showing how effective it is in getting to sleep. And then there's this breath, which is really interesting, and it's kind of two inhales and an exhale, and it's like highly effective in relaxing the body. So if you breathe two times through your nose, inhale again at the top, and then exhale through the mouth. Let's do that again together. Inhale through the nose, inhale again, and exhale through the mouth. It essentially, because of the two inhales, it helps the lungs receive even more oxygen, which then reduces the blood pressure. And it's almost the breath that we associate when we, after we've cried, after we've kind of had that stress release, because, right? And it's a really helpful breath to do before bed, yoga nidra. And then, of course, just really simple belly breathing, which is just kind of like really focusing on exhaling longer than your inhales, and really focusing on breathing into the lower part of the body. Sleep is just really the foundation for health and happiness, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, I mean, people used to be like, I only sleep 4 hours a day, and be so proud of it. But now we know that you need, I guess it's obvious, isn't it? You sleep, you rejuvenate. But it can also be very, very elusive for people. And then that stress creates more, less sleep. And so the cycle goes on. So that's why it's almost more to do with how you go to bed and doing breath work, or like reading a book, all those things, they can really make a big difference.
And journaling, because when we journal, we activate a different part of our brain, which then relaxes the emotional side. So I often understand the brain almost like an automatic car. We have an accelerator and a brake. And when we're feeling when we're ruminating, and also science has proven that about maybe an hour or 2 hours before bed, we have that jolt of energy. And often that kind of makes us suddenly go, I want to sort my entire closet out before I go to sleep, or some ridiculous job that we feel like we've got to rush around the house and do. But that's actually very normal. And so actually just to recognize how normal that is can be really helpful in allowing it to pass, because it does pass quite quickly. And obviously the reason for that jolt of energy back in kind of prehistoric times was because when we're sleeping, it's a very vulnerable state. So it was to give us the energy to make sure that, yes, like our environment is clear and safe. So allowing that to pass either through like a hot bath, hot shower or something, is really helpful. And then doing some journaling, because often when we wake up in the night, it's because our, again, like quite prehistoric survival system believes it's good to wake us up. Our brain isn't trying to be annoying or hurtful or, all of the things we call it. It's just trying to say, hey, something could be wrong. And it can be something as simple as, I think I'm going to forget to do that thing tomorrow and I should have done it. So by journaling before bed, we kind of, again, help us to reassure and nurture that part of us that then wants to kind of believe that we are unsafe in some way, shape or form. Does anybody have any other questions?
There's a couple of questions. One is about, there's a lot of talk about CBD oil at the moment and hemp oil, and helps with stress and sleep. But the other thing is exercise. Exercise is definitely related to nutrition, and what your views around timing of exercise. I guess it's about what works for everyone, but also what your views around those two things.
Okay, so CBD, I use it a lot. It's actually not... it's what I think it's called a novelty food in this country, so it's not licensed for any use of healthcare per se, because it is categorized a novelty food as far as I know still. But with CBD, you need to make sure you get it from a good source. And I think Puris is a company that I use a lot, or Corez. But I think I find it very useful. And also, just what people tell me, it's not even whether I give it to them. When they come into clinic, they're like, I use CBD, and I use it when I feel anxious, and it's really helpful. So that's just, it's just what, you know, anecdotal. So that's what I think about CBD. And exercise. Okay, it depends, I suppose. If you're training for something, it's good to be able to train when you've eaten and before you've eaten, so that you become resilient to different scenarios, I suppose. I think training in the evening is very stimulating, so therefore makes it harder to sleep, as we're talking about sleep. And I think it also depends on your time. I think it's when you can do it, apart from anything. It's like, are you at work all day and you can only train in the evening? I'm a morning trainer. If I don't do it in the morning, it doesn't happen. But I think from a nutrition point of view, most people train on an empty stomach in the morning, that I know, because afterwards, you can't. What is a tricky thing is you can't eat and then ask your body to train, because you're asking for blood supply to go to too many places, and obviously you can get cramp. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Also, what I think is so brilliant is the research shows that if you exercise for 5 days a week, it's actually been proven to be as effective as a low-grade antidepressant. So I'm just like, from a mental health perspective, I think it's like one of our core basic needs. I think it's really difficult to live a happy life without moving the body at least 5 times a week.
And it doesn't, and actually it doesn't have to be, well, I totally agree, but it doesn't have to. I think the thing that people fall down on with exercise is they're like, I am going to do a HIIT class every day for an hour and a half. And it's not sustainable. So you have to find something. So just for anybody who wants to walk, LSE did this amazing study, 30 years, looking at runners and walkers. After 30 years, walkers were fitter, leaner, happier than the runners. So if walking for 20 minutes, half an hour at brisk pace is what you can manage, then go for it. But do something that is sustainable and that you can continue doing, because consistency is better than not.
I love that low intensity exercise.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Coming back to your 5-day plan, where can we find, do you have a book or do you have a website where we could find how to follow that plan, please?
Yeah, there is a website. I mean, the 5-day plan, I do it once a month. It's a delivery, but you can find it. There's loads of recipes on my website. And there's also a 5-day plan on my Instagram, I think, in one of the highlights, because I did it. But there's loads of recipes everywhere for it. Otherwise it gets delivered. I only do it once a month, because that's what we have time for. But and it's sort of like, actually, it's not only that. It's more that there's a community feeling when we do it. Everyone's like, oh, I'm on the 5-day plan. I'm on the 5-day plan. So, and it's not sort of like you can do a couple of days and not the others. Yeah, so it is the whole plan. So, so we do it once a month.
When does it start?
I don't know, but it might be February 6th, I guess. 5th is a Saturday? 7th. Ish. Something like that, yeah.
Thank you. Continuing from your 5-day plan, I looked on your website, and if you don't deliver to certain postcodes, can you... London postcode...
It's so true. The delivery is a nightmare. It wasn't the best business plan on the planet, actually. Cooked fresh, delivered fresh every day. Sometimes it depends, because if there's quite a few people in your area, the delivery company will go out of their way. So just if you email me, then the team will have a look at it. Because also sometimes they say they won't and then they will.
Okay.
They will go to them and ask them.
And something you mentioned earlier about your green juices... could you sort of specify sort of like a few examples of the type of greens that you put in the juice?
Well, I suppose the best things to do for green juices are cucumber and celery are great because they're full of water. So, so juicing leaves can get quite tricky unless you've got a masticating juicer. I use a big juicer. And so I put in spinach and then I put in some cucumber because it flushes the spinach through. But otherwise, you can juice anything like cabbage, kale, anything green. I tell you what is really handy, though, or a good tip, is lemon or lime, because it takes the cabbage out of the cabbage. And you can sweeten it with a little bit of apple. I mean, I wouldn't, but you can. You know, I go quite hard green. Shock. Or courgette. Courgette's another one that's quite good, quite watery.
Sorry, I just had a quick question. If you're doing fasting and exercise, how would you recommend doing that? Like if you're on a 5-2, for instance, would you say avoid exercising on your like 2 days or avoid exercising the day after your 2 days? Or
What sort of exercise are you talking? I mean, actually, I would say no, you can carry on, but it depends if you're like do cardio, a four-hour like, run.
Yeah, like cardio, like running.
Okay, but how long for?
Don't know. between 7 and 10K.
Okay, only because I suppose that's probably fine. I mean, for the five, I think fasting, what's funny is people panic that they're not getting enough energy for that day. We overeat all year round. I mean, you've definitely got enough energy to get through, because people are always like, oh no, but I'm fasting. I'm like, you'll be absolutely fine, unless you're literally doing a water fast, in which case you may feel, you know, or you're going to go for a 4 hour, you know, how long? We've got 90 minutes in us. We've got 90 minutes of energy in our muscles. So unless you're going to over-exercise more than that, you don't need to refuel necessarily before, you know. So you should be fine. And it's actually, I suppose if I was having a very low-calorie day, I'd do something sort of more nurturing to the body. So it's not always this, like, chi energy. You know, there's always this really aggressive energy on top of us. Sometimes it's nice to take care of ourselves and be a bit softer.
Main meals usually about 11 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. And then I don't eat at all between 4:30 and 6 a.m. every day. So I guess what I'm...
So your eating window is 11:30 till 4? Yeah.
So because my exercise is in the morning, my main meal is about 11, 12 o'clock. I have a snack at 4, and then I don't eat after 4:30 p.m. So I'm doing a daily...
Because that's quite an intense it's a very small eating window, and it sounds like you're having one main meal a day with a snack.
Main meal, so after the gym I have like tuna or salmon or something, and I have a main meal around 12, and then 4 o'clock I have dal. Actually, I love dal.
Nice, yeah.
Dal is it's got a lot of protein, it's got a lot of roughage.
Yeah.
But the main thing is then you have to actually adjust, you know, your lifestyle around it. So, you know, my social life is very daytime. Sometimes if I eat in the evening, it's very, very rare. But I guess it's all down to timing, isn't it? So you can fast and exercise at the same time, as long as you're actually making sure you fuel your body.
Yeah, you definitely can. But I would just say, you know, the thing, interesting thing there is, I mean, definitely, I think if you can definitely fast, and as long as you're fueling your body correctly. But I would say, and this isn't, you know, when your food life starts to affect your social life or life, I feel like that's when sometimes it can become too rigid. So if you're thriving, that's one thing. But I know people who become very stringent and stressed and they don't thrive. So, you know, I would just break it sometimes and go out for dinner in the evening, like you said you do sometimes, you know. I think, but otherwise you'll be fine to exercise at 11 in the morning, exercise at 7, eat at 11, 4, and finish at 4 is absolutely, absolutely fine. As long as you feel fine.
They don't drink, right? So daytime, it's all about daytime.
Yeah, perfect.
Sometimes it's
just... Enjoy yourself a bit. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, Poppy, a while ago, I think on your podcast you had a lady called the Bean Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Who was fascinating, but talked quite a lot about like pulses and legumes as this like total superfood that can cure inflammation, all that kind of thing. And I was just wondering how magic do you think beans are?
Shall I tell you a bit about her? She's called Karen Hurd,
And her story is amazing, but I'd love to hear your perspective on it. Great question. So basically, she has this quite kind of like amazing story. She worked in like the chemical warfare division of the army, and so worked a lot with people who got poisoned through kind of chemicals. Repeating myself, sorry. And anyway, very tragically, her 9-month-year-old had this terrible reaction. So she took her nine-month-year-old to hospital, and the doctor said, "We're really sorry. We don't think there's anything we can do. Kind of say goodbye, really." And she was absolutely fixed that her daughter was poisoned in some way, because she exhibited the signs of a being poisoned. So she called up a specialist in kind of child poisoning and said, "Look, this is what's happened to my daughter. What do you think I should do?" And so the specialist said, "I absolutely think that you're probably right here." And so they drip fed her through a syringe beans. In this idea that because when beans are the only things that really attach to, and as you can tell, I'm really not paraphrasing this very well, attach to the chemicals. Otherwise, they get reabsorbed in our bile, and they're actually the only soluble fiber. It's the only thing that like takes us out of the body. So she treats a lot of people with polycystic ovaries, any sort of kind of like autoimmune disease through this bean protocol, which, because she believes that because bile is reabsorbed every 90 minutes, she actually encourages people to have a spoonful of beans basically every 90 minutes to help the toxins be removed from the body.
That does sound good. I'll have a look at her later. I mean, she is talking about fiber from what I can gather. And
all about soluble fibres.
All about soluble fibre, yeah. But so you get fibre in lots of things, you know, it's in fruit and veg, it's in whole foods. But it's really crucial. Fibre is the unsung hero, and it is really, really crucial for our well-being. It is exactly that. It helps us eliminate toxins. It helps us, our bowel keep moving. It helps, you know, and it does, and it literally... So for lots of people with, you know, hormones, it helps get the hormones out. It really does. It's really, really important. But you can get it from, it's in lots of things. I mean, people are very, I have a plant-based husband, two of my children are vegetarian. So our baseline in our house is plant-based. So we eat lots of legumes and beans, and I think they're great. Some people find them hard to tolerate, and...
Because they do make you gassy.
They do, but they do make you gassy. That's because the bacteria, usually because people aren't used to eating them. Because you eat dal, I'm sure you don't, you know, it doesn't, it's fine. If you're not used to eating them and suddenly you give your bacteria this fiber, the bacteria go crazy, create loads of gas, and then people don't eat them again for the next 2 months. And then they try again. And actually it's about building that fiber content up, that fiber tolerance up. So then the bacteria will chill out because they'll be like, "Oh yeah, we get this fiber all the time."
Because Karen Heard says after 2 weeks, if you kind of get through that gassy period, yeah, within 2 weeks, you're not gassy. It's just taking the toxins out.
Yeah. Because the reason you get gassy is because the bacteria literally go crazy. Because they're like, "Oh my God, this is amazing. We have got so much fiber going on." And then they chill out. When it's always on tap, they're like, "Yeah, well, I can leave that fiber." And they don't create so much gas. Because they create gas, like, you know, because they're really busy with the fibre.
It sounded a bit rude, actually.
So beans and legumes, they're a brilliant source of... They're great. I mean, I love them. Some people do find them hard to tolerate, but I think if you cook them, you know, they're usually better. And adding turmeric, it really helps as well.
Can you tell us a bit about
bread? Oh, yes. What do you... Do you want to know if it's okay? Shall I just say yes? Bread's fine. You know what, bread, if you get, it depends how you are with bread. And not all bread is born equal. So some bread, sourdough is actually really fine because it's the way it's made, it's fermented. So the gluten is broken down before it's baked. Obviously, it's not got bacteria because it gets cooked. But before, and then there's one of my, the ones that I use in the 5-day plan that everybody asks about because it's made out of seeds. It's called Seedful. And it's a really dense loaf of... It's a really dense piece of bread. And you only need that, you know, you only need one bit. I mean, things like white bread, it causes a huge sugar spike, then I'm not a fan, sorry. Baguette, I'm not a fan, but it's quite nice with cheese on holiday. I suppose just a bit of moderation. Resistant starch. I don't know. Do you know what? I don't know that much about resistant starch, if I'm honest. I think the thing to do is to, I think to, in order to reduce your starches in your diet is always a good thing to do a lower starch. So, you know, so you don't want to have like white rice, white pasta. You want to have a complex carb because it's fibrous. It's more difficult for the body to break down. So therefore it doesn't hit the bloodstream as fast. I don't know, is that helpful? Not really.
I do invite anyone and everyone to, you know, if you haven't had breakfast, there are really, really yummy breakfast bits outside. So do feel free to at any moment collect some breakfast bits. And are there any questions? More questions? Or are we... Well, if there are no more questions... Oh, did you have a question? No? Okay. If there are no more questions, this leaves me to thank Rosemary a huge amount for spending her morning with us, sharing her wisdom, her knowledge, her insight, her guidance. And on the Arts Club email, hopefully you should all have had a link to Rosemary's website to find out more details on anything we've discussed today. And I'm sure you'll be here for the next few minutes in case you have some question that you don't want to announce to a room of 30. and thank you so much to the Arts Club and the Lanzerhof for hosting us. And I'm sure you guys all have been, but the Lanzerhof is just down the road. Which way? And it's literally like a health playground full of everything you could possibly want. But yes, thanks. And thank you to all for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.